This is an interview with Norma Paulus at her home in Lincoln City. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is 7/1/99, and this is tape 9, side 1. So we were talking about Wally Priestley.
The revenue committee, and then in 1975 when Mary Reakey had led the charge to change the inheritance taxes. And so Mary Reakey was carrying it on the floor of the House. And we had all of our votes lined up. Wally Priestley sat in the front row, so when he stood up, his back was to the speaker, and he could address the whole assembly. And so Mary got up, went through all the charts, gave all the explanations, talked about last session, how we almost got it passed, but then we had to shift the heirs to the from the lineal descendants to the collateral heirs. We knew we had the votes, so she sits down. I have to describe Mary Reakey. Mary Reakey was a Republican woman. I don't know how old she was then, but she had to be 50, over 50 years old. Mm-hmm. And she was short and squatty, and she had her hair down the middle of these two big braids that were wound around her head in a very traditional conservative fashion. She's a wonderful lady, really bright. She'd been chairman of the Portland School Board. But she'd put a lot of her heart and soul in this issue. It was a big thing with her, as it was with the rest of us. But it had been a commitment of hers for a long time. So, and she wasn't as relaxed about carrying bills as some of us. But at any rate, well, Mary finally sits down. We said, don't worry about it. We got the votes. Sits down. It passes. Yeah. Wally Priestley stands up and takes the microphone in his hand and says, members, I move to reconsider, which meant that it would be delayed. Mary Reakey, who was the picture of decorum, she would never swear, she would never be rude to anybody, she would never raise her voice. She leaped out of her chair and said, Wally Priestley, you prick! Well, she was so horrified at what she'd done, she grabbed a glass, grasped her chest and fell backwards and got pale and fell into her chair and went ass over tea kettle in her chair on the floor of the house. I was sitting behind her. I rushed over, as did, I can't remember, there was Roger Martin or somebody, but a man who, and we were near, rushed over, and she began sobbing that she had humiliated herself by this outburst. Well, the speaker, God bless him, immediately called for, somebody stood up, I move for a recess, just like that. Somebody really quick on their feet. One of the old hands there. And Iman gaveled us into a recess.
Was there press there?
Oh, hell yes. Oh, yes. I mean, it was the kind of the end of the session. Though. There was a big round. I'll never forget that. Wally Priestley, you prick! And she Well, anyway, I take her into the caucus, and we get into the caucus, and there's a standing ovation for her. Such was, you know, because Wally Priestley drove everybody crazy. It was just, you know, his arguments were always interminable, always in a gentle voice. This is the other thing that made it so funny. I mean, he was always a very gentle voice, and Mary was just the picture of decorum until this happened. Well, that night, we took her out to dinner, and she said, oh, I used to be such a nice person. And to this day, I can walk up to my deputy from those days, and I can walk up to him and say, what did Mary Reakey say after she called Wally Priestley? And he'd say, she said, oh, yeah, I used to be such a nice person. Well, God bless her. But everybody gave her a standing ovation. Even the Democrats did, because...
And you were saying off tape that Wally Priestley would set the fire alarm on with his toes?
Wally Priestley didn't have any visible means of support. And so he kind of slept in the lounge, and Lord Nelson knows, probably on Davenport's and everything else that was available in the Capitol. And he kind of had a room over at the Y, but he didn't have it all the time. And he would buy a loaf of bread or take some bread out of the lounge, I think, and start making toast or something and in his office. And more than once, the toaster set off the fire alarm, and then the fire trucks would come, and it might be on a weekend or at night, you know. And those of us that represented Marion County were always trying to get the rest of the state to pay for something to the fire upkeep and the policing of the Capitol, but to no avail.
So, any other Wally Priestley stories? I think there could be a book just on Wally Priestley stories.
On the Revenue Committee with him, he was such a gentle person. But he would persist with these socialistic ideas, no matter where he was. And then he got on the Revenue Committee, and when he started to understand the property tax system and found out that you could actually get deferrals for certain kinds of property, and that you could start Christmas tree farms and get a tax break and everything, he went out looking for property that he could buy to get his own tax break once he found out what it was all about.
And did he succeed?
I don't know. I doubt it, because he
didn't have any money.
He was not very entrepreneurial.
So, we talked a little bit about the property tax relief, and that it was one of the top priorities of the House Democrats, and most people supported McCall's proposal. To eliminate property taxes on homes altogether, I believe.
The McCall tax plan, there have been so many in all the years that I've been involved in this and variations of different ones, but the McCall tax plan came out. I know I was a supporter of it. As a matter of fact, Neil Goldschmidt and I were asked to be the co-chairman of the campaign to pass it.
At that time?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
In 1973. Wow. Whenever it was went out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And 73. And did you were then? You and Neil both served on that?
Mm-hmm.
Was this the first time you
And we had a press conference with a lot of labor people, I remember, and some business people.
Was this the first time you'd worked with Goldschmidt
mm-hmm.
on something? And, you know, with all the things that happened afterwards not included, what was your impression of him at the time?
Mm-hmm.
Was he mayor at that point? Of Portland?
I don't know whether he was still mayor or not. I think he was.
Yeah, I think he was too, because then...
He was.
He was until he was tapped to be Secretary of Transportation mm-hmm. under Carter, which would have been in 77. And Connie McCready took mm-hmm. his place. Well, Associated Oregon Industries said that the best way to defeat the McCall plan is to confuse the voter.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that by chance, or there?
I'd have to go back and maybe if I talk to Wally about it a little bit.
Why was the Association of Oregon Industries against the?
I have to look at all the aspects of the tax plan now, but wasn't a net receipts tax, was it? No.
Vern Cook was leading the opposition.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew Vern, I presume.
Oh, yes.
I'm sure you can tell me a few stories about Vern Cook, too. He was quite mm-hmm. a colorful character,
mm-hmm.
wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
We did an interview with series of interviews mm-hmm. with him a few years ago. He was sort of a perennial candidate for a mm-hmm. lot of different positions. Iman indicated a special election on the tax program prepared by the legislature may be held while the lawmakers are still in session if public opposition develops. Did that ever happen?
There have been so many tax plans that I worked on, I can't remember without going through, because there were a succession there of sales taxes. And I will tell you this, though, that and Gordon McPherson was also supporting it, but McCall took that very, very hard when it was defeated.
One thing I've heard about McCall is that he had a hard time dealing with opponents in terms of taking things personally. That if he would win election by a wide margin, he would be very hurt that so many people had voted against him, and things like that. I mean, he sounded like he had a lot of attachment to legislation and would take it very personal. Mm-hmm.
He was just very, very saddened by the defeat of that. He took it personally. So.
Did he come down to the legislature at all? Did he address the legislature other than the opening of the legislature?
No, but he was in the coffee shop all the time, or in the hallway all the time, or in the press room all the time. He was very accessible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Some of the other issues that happened during that time, McCall's budget recommendations for the session called for a 30% increase in the overall budget, but a state pay increase of 12%, and more state police and 551 positions added to the human resources department, and so on and so forth, with a lot of other departments, environmental quality, highway, forestry, commerce, revenue, PUG, workers' comp, things like that. Is that was there a good reason to go through such an expansion at that time?
Well, I think that it was kind of following up on where Hatfield had left off. Hatfield trying to bring the state government out of the last century with the elimination of the Board of Control and turn it over to the executive branch, and the executive branch was getting stronger and stronger, but it was very, and that's, the Board of Control had the governor, the secretary of state, and the treasurer operating the prison and all of the other institutions, and so it left the governor with the very difficult job of trying to actually manage a state system. So when Hatfield tried to begin the reorganization of government, the Board of Control was the first thing that he was successful in abolishing. Well, then the Department of Human Resources had all these different factions to it, and Fish and Game did too. There were lots of different smaller agencies or commissions. So McCall, in an attempt to reorganize government, put all of the institutions and welfare, those things that related to human needs, human services, under one commission. The same thing with natural resources. There were some things that were left undone, but the major ones were natural resources and human resources. So I think that it wasn't so much a big increase as it was an amalgamation of these with...
Right. Some of the other aspects of the tax initiative that he was proposing was... dropping property taxes at one point at least by 74%, which was his top priority, and eliminate all homeowner property taxes for schools, increase income taxes, which I think passed both the House and the Senate, limit federal income tax deductions, and levy a 3% tax on business profits and income property.
Well, that's what AOI was against.
Yeah, I see. Okay, okay. And now, if he was going to eliminate all homeowner property taxes for schools, then really the control of the whole school system would shift to the state then and be based under income tax.
It's essentially the same thing that we have now with Proposition 5.
Uh-huh. Right.
Nation number 5.
Right. But this would have done that pretty much back then. And, mm-hmm. and
except it would have it would have added another tax.
You would have added another tax.
Well, the tax on business.
On the tax on the business, that's right. That's right. And from what I was reading, that the Senate and the House disagreed over how to provide property tax relief, and a conference committee tried to resolve it, but then it went to the there was an election for it on May 1st, and that's when it was defeated. Was it soundly defeated?
And it was yes, and it was just a short period of time to put the campaign together.
While the legislature was still in session.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Has that ever happened before that you know of, an election during the session?
Yes, there have been. I can't remember the issues, but that doesn't happen often, but it has happened.
Why would they have allowed it to happen so quickly? Why wouldn't they want to postpone it so that they could have more time?
Well, if it went down, then they'd have to come up with something else.
And they wanted to have the legislature in session.
Mm-hmm.
Be able
they'd
to
have
come
to
up
know
with.
How much they had to give the schools.
Well, maybe you could tell me the story from your perspective of land use planning, Senate Bill 100, and how it came into being.
Well, I had a group of farmers. The principal one was Liz Van Leeuwen, who served in the legislature for about 15 years or so. Came to me after my first session, I was visible, and said that they wanted to talk to me about land use planning. And then Hector McPherson told me that he was trying to work with some farmers, that there was tremendous growth predicted, and that Senator Tom McCall had been working on land use planning with his administrative districts with Senate Bill 10, and as a precursor, there were a lot of things floating around. The Greenway concept was floating around, just all kinds of things that dealt with the environment and dealt with land use and dealt with farmers.
The problem, though, with Senate Bill 10 was that it didn't have any, there was no money behind it.
Right.
For one thing,
mm-hmm.
and also they didn't have really well-defined standards.
Right. No, but it was just a loose kind of first step, and it created a lot of opposition from the religious right, the conservative right.
Really? For what reason?
Because I was running for the legislature. When I went to the Republican Central Committee to be interviewed, a couple of people in there mentioned Senate Bill 10, which was almost as bad as communism. And they'd say that Tom McCall had gotten his orders from this room 213 on the fifth floor of this building in Chicago, something like that. I started with Chicago, and that it was to take away the county government and county sheriffs, that it was really the start of regional government, and before long it would be world government. And of course I probably knew all of that, didn't I, that this was regional government, and regional government was a very bad thing. We wanted city government and county government. We did not want regional government. And then if you listened, the instructions to the Chicago office came from New York City. And then it came from the United Nations. And then it came from the bankers. And then if you follow them that far, they confide to you that all the bankers were Jewish.
It was part of the Zionist plot.
It's just nonsense, but they were serious about it, and it was an undercurrent. It's an undercurrent that's still there, except now that it's got more money and more technology and more front people. But at any rate, so I was very aware of this, and tuned into the McCall administration, and he helped me win my first election. So I was very close to Bob Davis, his chief aide, and some of his press people. So I started talking to Hector McPherson about it, and that and the Greenway bill. And I don't know how many meetings I had. I mean, I can't tell you how many meetings I went to. It was just a constant thing. So as the session came into being after this interim, Hector said, "I assume you're going to be the principal sponsor on the House side." And I said, "Yes." And after the session opened up, and nothing was done about it for a while, Hector finally came to me and told me that Ted was going to control the Environment Committee, and that he did not want my name on it. He didn't say he didn't want my name on it, but he said he didn't want anybody's name on it.
Why?
Well, I don't know why. Ted is... I think I'd introduced some bills, a lot of bills on the environment, and one of them was solar energy, and I'd asked Ted to be the sponsor in the Senate. And I think I was the first person in the United States to introduce a bill regarding solar energy.
Really? Mm-hmm. That was in the same 73 session?
Or mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And that when it was... It was the beginning of the session, and it was such an eye-catching thing that a television reporter asked me to step outside and talk to him about it. Well, I did, but it made a big splash in the evening news, and I think Ted thought that I'd done that was by design. It's the only thing I can think of, either that and the fact that he... I was disappointed because I'd worked so hard on it, and that right. Hector had always assumed that I would be the sponsor, and finally at some meeting at the Capitol to honor the anniversary of it, he alluded to the fact that I was a very principal player in it. But there are a whole host of, nobody knows that. People knew it at the time, but not now. But it was really LB Day that finally put it together, made it work.
Just to go back a step, you were talking about the solar energy bill that you had introduced, which was the first of its kind in the United States. Could you explain to me what the nature of that bill was?
Well, it was to allow tax credits. But the reason I did it is because I visited a house down on by Coos Bay that a man with no formal education had taken a Poplar Mechanics article and decided that he was going to heat his home in Coos Bay by the sun. And he had, it takes too long to explain it, but he was receiving 85% of his heat from the sun. The devices that he'd used, and I was just very taken with that. And then at the same time, Joel Schatz, this
bushy-haired, wild-eyed director of energy that Tom McCall appointed. Brilliant man. Was beginning to talk a lot about solar energy. And he later on suggested that she could build solar panels down in eastern Oregon, southeastern Oregon, and take care of our power needs. Anyway, I introduced a bill then to further solar energy based on my introduction to it and following up on it with Jill.
And what happened to that bill?
Well, it didn't pass. You know, it was such a... I did the same thing with geothermal energy. Anything to ward off our dependence on nuclear power, because I was opposed to that. And still am because of the storage issue.
Right. When this was all taking shape at the very beginning, I believe that Hector had said to me that he had been wanting an interim committee after the 71 session or during the 71 session to be established so that he could study the issue between the sessions, and that John Burns wouldn't go for it. And so he just started doing a series of things on his own.
Right, and just meeting after meeting after meeting after meeting. First with the farmers. I mean, the environmental groups wanted it. The Oregon Environmental Council and other people like that wanted it. But no one had a plan for it. No one knew how to go about it. Then, at the same time, getting the environmentalists in support of it, but also kind of harnessed. And there were some very thoughtful people that in the environmental movement that were thinking about it. And some urban planners, people like that, that were thinking about it. But while we were doing that, then we had to bring the agricultural community totally on board. And while they wanted to protect farmland, they didn't want somebody coming out of Portland telling them how to do it. So Hector and the Carnegies and the Van Loons, a whole lot of people like that, Oregon Farm Bureau, started helping Hector, but Hector was really the main workhorse on it.
There was a group.
But in the legislature, it wasn't Ted Halleck that got it passed. It was L.B. Day that really was the one that had the political skills to pull it off.
And what was it about L.B. Day that made him such a able person in dealing with something like this? Because I heard that when he was chair of the LCDC later on, that he was really quite controversial, and that a lot of people... didn't like the way he was handling that. Maybe it was just because he had tough issues he had to deal with.
It was because he had tough issues the first time anybody had ever tried to do it. And to hold the nucleus together, you had to give a little bit here and to give a little bit there and balance it.
So he was skilled in that kind of negotiating, arbitrating.
Well, he was a big, rough person that had a kind of an odd way about him in some respects, but the bald truth was always right in front of us as far as he was concerned, and he didn't shy away from it and tried to bring about a compromise and find some common sense answers to the problems. And just dogged determination, he kind of bulled his way through it.
There were a couple forerunners to it. One was Project Foresight to acquaint people with land use planning that Clay Myers was in charge of. And then then there was a feedback group, Citizens Response to the Foresight Committee, that Ken Bonham, who was the executive director of that, was in charge of. And then there, of course, as you had alluded to before, there were all these other environmental bills that had kind of led up to this, the bee bills, the beach bill, the bottle bill, the bicycle bill one.
Yeah, the bicycle bill, that was really fun because nobody thought it would happen, and we just kind of, the Thornton that was on the Natural Resource Committee was a minister, he still is minister in Portland, and he was one of the guys that really helped along because he rode his bicycle from Portland to Salem every day, and then Stathos would ride his bicycle all over. And my campaign pictures have me and my whole family riding a bicycle for four, you know. Bicycle for two, but we had the two kids stuck on there.
Oh, I see. Okay, I was wondering about it. There had also been the Oregon Coastal Conservation and Development Commission, too.
Yes, and they were very active, and I'm trying to think of his name, is so... such a leader in that.
In the Coastal Commission?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then...
they had created a... in the 1971 legislature, it had created the commission to coordinate planning, and and it was responsible to the state legislature and not to local interests entirely. Mm-hmm. So that
very
was
controversial. All these regional governments, regional.
And then Hector had pushed for this interim committee, and couldn't get it by John Burns. And then there was a task force that had James Moore, Martin Davis, Russ Tripp, Norman Hilton, Jerry Brewster, Alan Lowell, Russ Beaton, Bob Logan.
Russ Beaton was a planner.
And Osberg was involved in that. Mm-hmm. And